Be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to St. Mark. Jesus went to the district of Tyre. He entered a house and wanted no one to know about it, but he couldn't escape notice. Soon a woman whose daughter had an unclean spirit heard about him. She came and fell at his feet. The woman was a Greek, a Syrophoenician by birth. And she begged Jesus to drive the demon out of her daughter. He said to her, "Let the children be fed first, for it is not right to take the food of the children and throw it to the dogs." She replied and said to him, "Lord, even the dogs under the table eat the children's scraps." Then he said to her, "For saying this, you may go. The demon has gone out of your daughter." When the woman went home, she found the child lying in bed and the demon gone. The Gospel of the Lord. As I mentioned, it is a great day, not just because Sister Cora and Sister Desiree are with us. 1750th anniversary of the martyrdom of St. Valentine. Much of what we know about him was written substantially after his death so that it's passing on oral traditions rather than documentary ones. But St. Valentine was one imprisoned for the faith, that he was exposed for living in helping young couples come to sacramental marriages, that he was trying to take the natural phenomenon of love between a man and a woman and raise it to what Christ wants it to be, a sacramental encounter with his own love. And that's why, because there are no coincidences in God, when he was preparing for this celebration before he said fiat lux, he arranged that the Feast of St. Valentine's 750th occasion would have Genesis. "It is not good for man to be alone. I will make a suitable partner for him." We talked a couple days ago about one of the ways of the image of God being marriage, that we're called to exist in a loving communion of persons, reflecting the loving Trinitarian communion, which two people can love each other so much that their love can generate a third person, a fruit of and a means for the growth of that love between the two. Today we have the extended account of the creation of Eve, brought out of Adam's heart. The Jews, when they understood the taking of the rib, weren't just looking at a bone. They were looking at what covered the heart and the lungs, necessary for somebody to breathe, necessary for someone to live, the real core of the person. It symbolized that man and woman stood side by side, equal before God. This was the first time that man existentially rejoiced. This is bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh, strength of my strength, weakness of my weakness, according to the Jewish mentality. And it was through that analogy of human love that they became capable of receiving and reciprocating divine love. Because before that, even though throughout creation God had continuously pronounced, "It was good, it 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 was good," he finally said, "It is not good for man to be alone." And Eve was God's loving response, a suitable helper. We find out two things there. First, we are created before the fall in need of help. precisely helped to be able to come to God. And then second, we have been created precisely as suitable helpers, because others won't come to God unless they do so in a loving communion with us. That's a reality that St. Valentine was very much promoting and gave his life for, just as John the Baptist gave his life for marriage, just like so many others over the course of the centuries have recognized that this teaching about the importance of marriage is worth their blood. For us as priests and religious living the vow of chastity, I can't stress enough that this is a gift of the Lord precisely to make our love white hot. And it's important for us to recognize not only the importance of philia, real loving friendship, and agape in everything, because that's the essence of divine love. Man and woman were not created in the image of God who is eros, but God who is agape. So the loving communion of persons is always agapic first and foremost, and agape is meant to purify philia and eros. But it is really important for us to grasp that we're never going to flourish as human beings called to chaste agapic and agapic love of friendship unless we have relations, men and women. Unless we interact. John Paul II used to always stress about the importance of the archetypic masculine and archetypic feminine. That we don't need a particular man and a particular woman in order to be fulfilled. We don't need to be married lest we die. But what we do need is we need the complementarity of the sexes. And he was describing that in the archetypical masculine, the archetypical feminine. For example, man's courage can make woman bolder. And woman's receptivity can make the man far more tender. We could go on and on and on about this complementarity, but it's essential. And especially in Orthodox, more what we might say conservative or traditional expressions of our faith, this reality is sometimes endangered. There are otherwise very solid, faithful religious orders of men, or even new movements, in which the men are deformed in chastity so that they can't look a woman in the eye, and treats every woman as an Eve after the fall rather than a Mary. It does real damage to women who feel that somehow they're like Salome before Herod and his courtiers when they're just living in a very holy way. Likewise, and I myself have experienced with certain CMSWR communities in which they'll never even address you by name. It's all Father, 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 and they'll keep you at a distance as if just having ordinary interactions is a temptation. That's not chastity. Chastity, as we've mentioned, is tied first to love, in which we're willing to die for the other and we'll never sacrifice the other for our own needs. Second, to purity, so that we see God in the other. And then piety, that we reverence God in the other. But it's not good for man or woman, including religious man or religious woman, to be alone. And God has made suitable helpers, lots of friends. But in a particular way, he needs us to be able to help each other. Parish life is being killed precisely because of the lack of religious women. As a result of that, the parishes are deformed. Even really good manly men, when they come on in, if they don't have the archetypical feminine in their parishes, A lot of the times, it's just not the warm home that it needs to be. Once upon a time, when there were women religious, for example, in parish school, they were able to complement the tone that would be set by the various priests leading the parish. Without it, just doesn't create, that homey aspect of the church, of Mother Church, just doesn't happen. Likewise, a lot of the times with women's religious communities, I keep hearing the Brad Paisley song echo in my head, "You need a man around here." Because sometimes without men helping to confront problems, things can remain too interior, and small little things all of a sudden become really major. Which is why you're so lucky that you had a real man, a real strong man, to found the Sisters of Life. But I can't stress enough how much you need the accompaniment of people like Cardinal O'Connor, who aspire to help you the way he did, in order really to become what God, through him, inspired him to found. It's not good for man to be alone. Let us create a fitting helper. We need to be helped, and we need to help. There are many expressions of this. Today we see a little bit of the interaction between masculine and feminine in the gospel. St. Mark's account today is a little briefer than St. Matthew's, an eyewitness who was there. He fills in the details. It's one of the most initially perplexing scenes in sacred scripture. But once you really get into it, it's one of the more beautiful ones. This mom, with maternal love, caring for her daughter, possessed, hears that Jesus is there. She's a pagan, but she loves her daughter enough, and she places faith enough that she goes to find him. She had heard about his reputation. Jesus' first reaction when this mother is pleading for her little girl is to give her the cold shoulder. He totally ignores her. Not because he was cruel, but because he wanted to bring her out of herself. So the woman goes to the apostles, asks their help. She was clearly tormenting them in such a way that they just wanted to get rid of her. And so they came up to Jesus and said, "Please help her so that she's no longer continually to harass us." And Jesus' next response was, "I've been sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." She's not of the house of Israel. And so rebuffed a second time. Third time, she comes up to Jesus and drops at his feet and gives him proskynesis, gives him homage, a pagan doing this to a Jew. "Please, Lord." And then Jesus seems to be the most insulting of all. "It's not fit to take the food of the children and cast it to the little dogs." But this woman, unstopped, with great maternal perseverance, says, "Yes, but even the little chihuahuas receive the scraps that come from the children's table." And that's when Jesus, testing her in each of these ways, like a good dad, to help her to grow, precisely to grow in faith, says, "Woman, great is your faith. It shall be done to you as you ask." At that moment, the demon departed from her daughter. A real complementarity. Jesus understood what she needed in order to be able to grow, drew her continuously from her little faith into far greater faith. And she was showing everyone how a woman just doesn't give up when she loves. Today the church likewise celebrates the 1150th anniversary of the death of St. Cyril, today celebrated with his brother, St. Methodius, for a reason. Because when they were asked to preach the gospel in Moravia, they were asked as a duo. And off they went, Methodius was a great military person, an organized mind. Cyril was a philosopher, a teacher. And they went out. Methodius was able to organize so many of the details, and he had great political skill. Cyril was a genius, and when he recognized that the people, in order to be able to receive the gospel, needed to be able to ponder sacred scripture on their own, he devised what we now call the Cyrillic alphabet in order to be able to write down the scriptures and the texts of the liturgy in their own language, Old Slavonic. So the two of them together were able to succeed where each of them individually would not. We always need these fitting helpers. Now, sometimes we have a choice in the matter. Sometimes we don't. Sometimes God has the choice in the matter. And he puts us in these arranged communions because he knows that the complementarity between two people will be exactly what the other needs. There's a reason why when Jesus sent out his first disciples, he sent them out two by two. They could have covered twice as much ground if he had sent them out one by one. But he wanted to send them out two by two, as St. Gregory the Great once commented, so that in their going forth, they would be practicing the various things that they would be preaching. The need to be patient with each other, to be kind with each other, to never be arrogant, never remember wrongdoing, all of the attributes of love that St. Paul himself describes. That they would be forgiving each other, they would be loving each other, because they couldn't preach the gospel without it. So today at this Mass, we give thanks to the Lord for all the helpers he has given us over the course of time, for the great friends he has given us, for the ways that he has challenged us and still does to the archetypical masculine and feminine. And it all comes to its dramatic conclusion here at Mass each day, where Jesus, the bridegroom, becomes one flesh with us, his bride. As he gives us his body and blood, we receive that self-gift and become one flesh in the consummation of this nuptial mystery. Today, as we prepare to receive him, we remember that the ultimate answer to the divine recognition that we needed a suitable partner was to send Jesus as that suitable partner to help us individually and to help us as a communion to be brought out in the same way that he brought forth the faith of the Syrophoenician woman, so that he might be able to say to us with each other's help, "Oh, great is your faith," and come one day to experience the eternal nuptial communion to which the marriage of Adam and Eve and every sacramental marriage points. Praise be Jesus Christ.